The women made another demand. Since raiding was so crucial to the economy, why could they not bear arms too? Once again, Salama brought their question to the Prophet. This went right to the heart of the Ghazu economy. A woman who was taken prisoner during a raid was valuable booty. She could be sold, married, used for labour, or forced into prostitution. If women were allowed to fight, instead of waiting passively to be taken prisoner, there would be a huge reduction of raiding income. The controversy split the community, and Muhammad was besieged by angry men who felt that Allah was emasculating them. Omar especially could not understand the Prophet's ridiculous leniency towards women. But Muhammad stood firm and insisted that God had made his will clear. But the women had chosen the wrong moment to make their move. There was no way that the men would accept this at a time when the Ummah faced extinction. The laws of inheritance and divorce remained in place, but Muhammad found that his enemies in Medina were making political capital out of this radical legislation, and that he was opposed at this crucial juncture by some of his closest companions. Matters came to a head over the question of wife beating. The Quran forbade Muslims to inflict violence upon one another, and the women began to complain to the Prophet when their husbands hit them, demanding that they be punished as the Quran prescribed. Some even started to refuse sex to their abusive husbands. Muhammad was revolted by the very idea of violence towards women. The Prophet never raised his hand against one of his wives, or against a slave, nor against any person at all, the historian Ibn Sa'd recalled. He was always against the beating of women. But he was ahead of his time. Men like Omar, Ibn Ubay, and even the gentle Abu Bakr beat their wives without giving the matter a second thought. Knowing that Abu Sufyan was mustering a massive army against Medina, Muhammad had to give way in order to retain the loyalty of his men. "Very well," he told his indignant companions, "beat them. But only the worst of you will have recourse to such methods." A revelation seemed to give husbands permission to beat their wives, but Muhammad did not like it. "I cannot bear seeing a quick-tempered man beat his wife in a fit of anger," he said. Yet again, the conflict with Mecca had compromised his vision and forced him to adopt a course of action that, in more normal circumstances, he would have preferred to avoid. The Quranic legislation about women is intertwined with verses about the war, which inevitably affected everything that happened in Medina at this time. Muhammad knew that he had no hope of surviving a Meccan onslaught with disaffected troops. In March 627, a massive army of 10,000 men, the Quraysh and their confederates, were on the march toward Medina. Muhammad could only raise a paltry 3,000 warriors from Medina and his Bedouin allies. This time, there was no stupid bravado. The Muslims barricaded themselves into the city in the centre of the oasis. Surrounded on three sides by cliffs and plains of volcanic rock, Medina was not difficult to defend. It was most vulnerable from the north, but Muhammad adopted a stratagem suggested to him by Salman al-Fassi, a Persian convert. The Quraysh were in no hurry, making their way grandly and confidently in easy stages, so the Muslims had plenty of time.